In California, the worst measles outbreak in 15 years is spreading.
The virus is roaring back into the headlines tonight. An outbreak somehow traced to
someone who had probably caught measles abroad, visited Disneyland, and may have sneezed.
Measles on the march in America.
This outbreak is showing no signs of letting up. There are already more cases this year than there were.
The number tripled to 644 measles cases reported in 27 states.
And I mean, is this all basically because of the anti-vaccination movement? Because parents aren't vaccinating their kids?
Yeah, you know, I think so.
A bill that would ban exemptions from childhood vaccines is advancing through the California legislature.
We are authoring legislation that will abolish the personal belief exemption.
I think you're starting to see why it is that mandates are so important.
There has been some inaccurate information circulating about vaccines, mostly stemming from a British study linking vaccines to autism.
We still continue to hear that vaccine caused autism, even though that's been debunked.
Repeatedly and thoroughly debunked.
You may have heard vaccination causes autism in 1 out of 110 children. Fuck that. Total bullshit. It doesn't.
The bill requiring children to be vaccinated has passed with bipartisan support. Every child must meet immunization standards before joining public schools, private schools, and daycares.
I would strongly encourage everybody, look at the science, look at the facts. CDC, the Center for Disease Control, can give you good information. Get your children vaccinated.
I have waited a long time to tell my story, and I want to tell it truthfully. I was involved in deceiving millions of taxpayers regarding the potential negative side effects of vaccines. We lied about the scientific findings. The CDC can no longer be trusted to do vaccine safety work. Can't be trusted to be transparent. The CDC can't be trusted to police itself. Just a few thoughts. William W. Thompson, Senior Scientist, U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
I was sitting at my desk where I teach at Simpson University. My phone rings, and it's Dr. William Thompson.
Brian, you and I don't know each other very well. I don't know how this is all going to play out. You have a son with autism, and I have great shame now when I meet families with kids with autism, because I have been part of the problem.
My son, Stephen, was born in February of 1998.
Steve, what does the cow say?
Tweet, tweet.
Doggy.
Doggy.
Yeah.
Doggy.
2 weeks after his 15-month vaccines, then he lost all language. He lost all eye contact. You'd pick him up and he would just hang limp. This is a time where CDC was just starting to do these studies on vaccines and autism. As a scientist, I have over 60 technical and scientific publications in major international scientific journals. And I was contacting the CDC and was deeply critical of their studies. And so the CDC decided that the scientist who was going to interface with me at that time was Dr. William Thompson.
Because I was on his back, because he didn't like what I was saying about the statistics,
I received a letter from a CDC attorney in 2004 saying that I was no longer permitted to contact the CDC. Fast forwarding to 2014, Thompson said to me, "Brian, if you listen to me and if you do what I tell you to do, I can guarantee you will be able to access a treasure trove of data, and I would like to guide you through these steps."
So I want to be a resource. I want to be valuable to you. I want you to have someone in the system?
For years, I had been trying to crack this edifice of the CDC and just getting little glimpses of what was not right.
The CDC has put the research 10 years behind. Because the CDC has not been transparent, we've missed 10 years of research because the CDC is so paralyzed right now by anything related to autism.
I am a licensed clinical psychologist and a board-certified behavior analyst. In 1978, I want to say the prevalence of autism was about 1 in 15,000 children. It was a very rare disorder. I was working at a clinic at UCLA, which was pretty much the only known center for treating children with autism, and we had maybe 6 to 10 children who we were working with. Somewhere around the early 90s, shortly after I opened CARD, the growth of autism has been so high and so rapid that I've never felt like I could ever catch up anymore. From a official diagnostic perspective, the way that we define autism, we were looking at deficits in two areas. The first is social communication and social interaction. And in that area, we require three specific symptoms to be present. Symptoms such as no social emotional reciprocity, no nonverbal communication, that means eye contact, for instance, or no development of relationships. The second required area of deficit is the presence of stereotypic, repetitive, restricted behaviors. And these are things like hand flapping, body rocking, insistence on routines being the same. One of the new additions is the presence of a sensory dysregulation. If a child has an inability to sense things correctly, not necessarily hearing things the way we do, that could be classified as a symptom of autism. So if you have 5 symptoms, 2 in the area of repetitive behaviors and 3 in the area of social communication deficit, then you will get a classification of what's called autism spectrum disorder, ASD.
We begin, though, as always, keeping them honest. Breaking news tonight, just hours ago, the British medical journal BMJ did something extremely rare for a scientific journal. It accused a researcher, Andrew Wakefield, of outright fraud.
I got a call on the 19th of May, 1995, from a mother telling me the story of her child, his regression into autism following a vaccine. And I said, how can I help you? I know nothing about autism. You've come through to the wrong number. And she said, no, doctor, my child has terrible gastrointestinal issues and no one will take them seriously. I was an academic gastroenterologist doing research with a particular interest in Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, inflammatory bowel disease. I knew nothing whatsoever about autism. When I was at medical school, it was so rare, we weren't taught about it. We heard a succession of stories which were very, very similar. Medicine is about pattern recognition, and there was a clear pattern emerging. So we decided, a group of us, including the world's leading pediatric gastroenterologists at the time, led by Professor John Walker Smith, decided that these children merited thorough investigation.
Well, Dr. Wakefield has been shown used absolutely fraudulent data. He created a fake paper. The journal allowed it to run. All the other studies were done, showed no connection whatsoever again and again and again. So it's an absolute lie that has killed thousands of kids.
And what we discovered and reported for the first time was this link between what appeared to be a novel type of intestinal inflammation and autistic regression in previously developmentally normal children. And among those, the majority had regressed into autism, according to their parents, following the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. It wasn't our place to censor their story because it may be uncomfortable for public health. Our job was to report that story accurately in order that it might lead to further investigation. And the paper explicitly said, this paper does not prove an association between MMR vaccine and the syndrome described. more work is needed to resolve this issue. That was the conclusion of the paper.
As an investigative medical journalist, I've spent the last 7 years working on one of the best medical talk shows in the world. We know in medicine that there have been many, many studies proving that vaccines do not cause autism. But the problem I have always had with that is thousands and thousands of parents all telling the same story. My child got a vaccine, usually the MMR vaccine, and then that night or the next day broke out in a fever. And then when they came out of the fever, lost speech, lost the ability to walk, basically regressed into what we know as autism, and never came back. Doctors used to be told to listen to their patient. That was the cornerstone of medicine as we know it. But something's changed recently where the patient doesn't know what they're talking about. And these parents, with their story of their children, have just been written off as though they have no idea what's really going on with their child. I have two kids. And anyone that has children knows that when we first have babies, we are overly sensitive to every little hiccup, every cough, every sniffle. So to say that a parent was just unaware that their child had issues, and suddenly they realized 1 year later that, oh, they have autism, that doesn't make sense to me. And so I wanted to look into this story and find out, what is this disconnect between medicine, science, and real parents?
I couldn't wait to be a mum. I remember specifically, before we even got married, talking about how important children would be in our lives.
I wanted a daughter first, then I wanted a son. And we were planning on having four children.
We were going to be the most perfect parents that we could be.
Bella was born, and that was a wonderful experience.
Bella was just this angelic, perfect child. She hit all her milestones. I got pregnant with Billy quite quickly.
Bella, say hello to Billy.
Hello.
We've now got a beautiful girl and a beautiful boy. Life was just amazing. So at 2, 4, and 6 months, Billy had his normal baby vaccines. A little bit snivelly, chesty, coldy after maybe the last one. So me, in my perfect mother mode, rushed to the doctor. I mean, is he okay? Do I need to give him anything? Yes, you need to give him antibiotics just to make sure there's not an infection in there. It didn't clear up. Rushing back to the doctor. Oh, we need more antibiotics. Let's just keep this going in him. And I remember my mother calling me up. My mother's a sort of homeopathic hippie. And calling me up saying, what are you doing? You're chucking loads of antibiotics down your son. For what? And I'm saying to her, Mum, with all due respect, you're an artist and they're doctors. So they know best. He was due his MMR vaccination at 12 months. So the morning, exactly to the day, my friend, she said to me, listen, I've heard that there may be a problem with this vaccine you're about to take Billy for, the MMR. And I said, Liz, are you crazy? What is the matter with you? If there was a problem with this vaccination, it would be headline news. The doctor would be calling me up saying, do not bother coming in. This is not a safe vaccine. None of that is happening. You're being negative, you're being careless, and you're listening to what? Some rumor that you heard somewhere. Billy could become deaf if I don't take him in now and get him this MMR.
You know, most of the evidence linking measles with autism is kind of settled down, and most of the doctors and scientists agree that it probably isn't the major cause.
I've been working in pediatrics for almost 20 years. I think most pediatricians view vaccines as they're the number one thing they do for kids.
Okay, buddy.
There
we go.
And a high one.
All right.
All right.
That was really good.
I'm young enough to not remember the days of kids in an iron lung because they were battling polio. You know, polio has essentially been eradicated from this country. In 98, the Wakefield study came out. My son had just been born. That study kind of pointed a finger at the MMR. As a parent, I was scared to give the MMR to my son. And as a matter of fact, I didn't give it to him on time because I wanted to see. I wanted to see what additional studies would show. And over time, additional studies did show that no, it's safe. And so he did get the vaccine. You know, if everybody stopped vaccinating, we'd be going back to the dark ages.
When
when a CDC scientist who'd been there at that time 17 years tells you this is how you access data, it didn't take me very long to realize, oh, I better do what he says, because he knows what he's talking about.
I just want to tell you one thing. Right now, I'm sitting in a very pretty position in terms of providing you a lot of information.
He asked me, what data sets are you going to request? And I said, well, I'm going to request two of the studies that you've done on Thimerosal, the mercury-containing preservative that's used in some of the vaccines. And he said, well, that's fine, but I want you to request the MMR data set first. And this is the study by Frank DiStefano and his colleagues in 2004.
It was the one study where we could end up creating a mess while the CDC tried to sort out something they couldn't understand.
The day Billy got the MMR was a living nightmare, the worst day of my life, to be honest with you.
I came in and I saw him lying in his cot, listless. He started this uncontrollable shaking. Imagine coming out of a frozen pond.
His eyes were doing this and he was shaking like this.
And I remember she grasped him and held him really tight to her chest.
There's immediate fear in John and there's immediate, mummy, this is not gonna happen. I don't know what is wrong with you, but this is not gonna happen. And we get to hospital, we rush him in, doctors are coming in and looking at him, and that's when they said, he's had a reaction, he's had a seizure, this is normal, this is common for many, many children who have this vaccination. It's absolutely okay, he's going to be fine. Nobody ever told me that there would be any side effect to any of the vaccinations my children had.
Following his febrile convulsion that he had the same day of the MMR, we were told to take him home.
He slept in the bed with us for the night. He seemed just very, very sleepy. In fact, he didn't really ever wake up to the Billy that we had before.
For me, it became really necessary to start looking at what types of medical issues are these children going through? What are the other factors that have affected them, that have brought them to this level of symptomology that we call autism? This is now probably the mid-90s. I came to notice that there was a very high use of antibiotics amongst these children. But B, what became pretty interesting was seeing the number of families who were reporting that their child had a regressive type of behavior occur right after their vaccinations. A lot of these parents were showing me footage of their children who had been completely developing normally until 18 months, and then all of a sudden, post-vaccination, had developed incredible regression. Children who had speech anywhere close to 50 to 100 words and had completely lost all of their words. Children who were extremely attached and interactive with their parents and had suddenly become isolated, no longer responding to their own name. This was all happening right after their MMR vaccines.
My oldest son, Ian, was born normal, developing normally. He was this beautiful boy, and we ended up at our 12-month visit, which is his 1 year. Then they gave him multiple vaccines at once. And within 7 days, he had a 104 fever and a rash all over his body. He had previously been noted in our videos, home videos, that he was walking and actually running at that point. 7 days after the vaccine, he was no longer able to do that. He was falling down. He became a really sick, sick little boy.
So the question for those of us investigating autism is age of exposure to MMR a risk for autism? And in order to understand why that might be, you have to understand something of the history of MMR vaccine. In 1987, there was an MMR vaccine that was being used in Canada, produced by SmithKline Beecham. And that vaccine caused meningitis. It was recognized quickly, and that vaccine was withdrawn in Canada. However, in the same month that it was withdrawn in Ontario, it was licensed in the UK. The name was simply changed from Trivirix to Pluserix. In the UK, it was used for 4 years, and likewise, it caused meningitis and had to be rapidly withdrawn. It was a public outcry. There was an acute loss of confidence by the public in vaccine policymakers, and the vaccine should, at that point, have been destroyed. It wasn't. It was then shipped to developing countries like Brazil, where it was used in a mass vaccination campaign. And there was an epidemic of meningitis, which was entirely predictable. Now, scientists studied that epidemic, and what they found is that the risk for meningitis was associated with age of exposure. The younger you got the MMR vaccine, the greater the risk of meningitis. For people like me investigating autism, the question was, is there a similar risk in autism? Is age of exposure to MMR a risk for autism just as it was for meningitis? We shared with the US Congress and the CDC the hypothesis.
The story as told to us, which we have an obligation to report, is that the majority of children regressed following a period of normal development in the face of MMR vaccination. That does not mean it is the cause of the disease.
The Institute of Medicine is a body of scientists and physicians that review the available data on vaccine safety and then advise our government on vaccine research policy. Well, because Andy Wakefield had put forth this theory that the age at which you receive the MMR may increase your risk of autism, the IOM looked to the CDC to do that very study. It was a study about timing. Does the earlier you receive the MMR vaccine increase the risk of autism?
When we talk about the MMR study, nobody had ever requested those data because it was a big secret that you could do it. Thompson told me to email such and such a person. And then on the inside, I also found out that one of the people preparing these data sets for me was Bill Thompson.
They don't really want people to know that this data exists again. Mm-hmm. You know, I just can't believe we actually got you that data.
Thompson couldn't send these documents directly to Brian Hooker because that would have been illegal. What Thompson identified was a legal loophole that is referred to as a citizen's request. That allowed Thompson to deliver to Brian Hooker potentially classified information in a legal way.
You get checked in England with your babies at certain times health by health visitors. So at 9 months, Billy had his full-blown check and it says no parental concerns, baby laughing, babbling, talking. So we pass that with flying colors. 18 months is when they next come in. And by this time, we know there's something seriously wrong with Billy.
Probably within 5 or 6 days, the first signs really was this vacancy. He wasn't the same smiley little baby that he was before. He had a blank expression. Then the diarrhea kicked in.
His tummy started to get bigger and bigger, bloated, rock hard bloated tummy. He would start to walk on tiptoes. His hair fell out in this dreadful high pitch scream, sort of whiny scream developed from him. And then came the head banging, the constant banging against his crib, the constant banging against the floor or a wall or anything that he could find to bang his head on. He would thrash it and thrash it. John and I would lie in bed at night just listening to this thud, thud, thud.
Thud.
There's nothing. He's now not even noticing his sister who he used to play with. John comes through the front door after work. No recognition that we were his parents or this child even belonged to us. Nothing, nothing, gone.
I mean, that was the time where our boy changed from what he was to a real tragic, tragic case of a child who regressed into this autistic state and lost everything. Lost everything.
The CDC, the way that they do research studies is very reactionary. They look at something that's creating a press and creating a buzz that could actually lower vaccination rates, and that's what they study. They don't study vaccines proactively. So if Andy had never done his original study, gotten that published in The Lancet, would have never created the uproar that rightfully it should have created, then the CDC would have never studied this.
The press conference for the Lancet paper was called by the dean of the medical school, who was the chairman of the media committee.
Temporal association between MMR and autism was initially made in the United States.
I had done an extensive research into measles vaccine safety and MMR vaccine safety in the pre-licensing phase. In other words, what safety studies had been done before these vaccines were put onto the market and into children. A 250-page report was compiled by me showing that the vaccine safety studies for MMR in particular were lamentable. They were lamentable. There are many, many assumptions have been made about the safety of this vaccine, and there had been problems which had been airbrushed. So I wrote to my colleagues and the dean, and I said, going forward, there are going to be questions about what parents should do next. I cannot, in due conscience, support the continued use of the MMR vaccine, having done this research. I said I will continue to vigorously support the use of the single vaccine, but can no longer support the use of the triple MMR vaccine. So the dean, as chairman of that committee, had three choices. He could have not had a press conference. He could have banned me from the press conference. Or when the question came up, as inevitably it would, what do parents do next about vaccinating their children? He knew what my response would be. He could deflect the question to someone else. When the question came up on the day, he directed it straight to me.
To assure you, we are not at odds on our acceptance of the need for measles vaccination, but we are all agreed on that is
important. All I recommended at that press conference was that parents opt for the use of the single vaccines, single measles, single mumps, single rubella, until the issue had been resolved scientifically. What happened when I made that recommendation? Unilateral decisions were made by the government in the UK to withdraw the importation license for the single vaccines, Merck opting in the US to cease the production of the single vaccines, giving parents no option. I said to a senior representative of the Department of Health, why, if your objective is to protect children against serious infectious disease, why would you take away the option of how parents do that? And she said, because if we allowed parents the choice of single vaccines, it would destroy our MMR program. In other words, the concern was for the protection of the program over and above the protection of children.
No one's career has ever been advanced in the medical industrial complex by being outwardly and openly critical of the vaccine industry. I'm Mark Blaxall, father of a daughter diagnosed with autism back in 1998. I've written two books that have come out of the autism movement, have been projected into autism advocacy ever since. Mikhail was born typical, everything was fine, was developing normally through her first birthday. We have vivid memories of early language, joint attention, lots of play. She was adorable, beautiful, cute. And then somewhere in the months after, she began to slip away and she lost language and she began to retreat into a world of her own. And at 2 years, 9 months, we got a formal diagnosis of full syndrome autism. It was a hopeless, pessimistic future that was laid out in front of us. She was going to be disabled for the rest of her life, likely to be non-vocal in an institution, and that the best thing we could do was to accept the inevitable. Part of the story we heard from the Harvard experts was autism was genetic. It was low and relatively constant prevalence. The more I learned, the more clear was that that whole orthodox view was false, completely false. Revolutions only happen in science when there is an anomaly that the old orthodoxy can't explain. With autism, the anomaly was the explosion in cases, which meant that what people were trying to describe as a genetic, neurologically based condition couldn't be genetic. It could only be environmental. It could only be some set of things that had happened to children. And you had to ask the question, what might it have been?
One of my personal training clients was the director of programs for LWT, London Weekend Television.
And this guy said, why don't you do a program and people out there, there may be someone out there with this condition.
He said, this is going to be an unbelievable story.
And he said, we've got nothing to lose. Right now, this child is either going to kill himself because he's going to smash his head to pieces, or we are going to go insane because everybody here is miserable.
And that program was aired, and we received 250,000 email hits.
Computers were kind of new then, the whole internet computer thing. Ours crashed. We'd set up a Billy Tommy website just in case somebody, one person might be able to help us. Crashed. The television station's computers crashed. They had never seen anything like this before. The parents had exactly the same story as us. Antibiotics, some were chicken pox a lot. Vaccine, bang, the symptoms are all the same. The diarrhea, the constipation, the high pitch scream, the banging of the head. We've all lived through it, it's the same story.
And it was Polly's idea to put all of this stuff together in a magazine called Autism File.
Let's all ask the questions and maybe someone can help.
These questions from these parents were not being answered by the doctors that they went to see. They came to us out of desperation, and we had 45,000 subscribers within 4 months.
When I originally got the MMR autism data, I came up with my own analysis plan, and I stepped through logically and systematically how the data should have been approached. I looked first of all at males versus females. Then I looked at black males. The relative risk of them receiving an autism diagnosis was astronomical, and it was highly statistically significant. I really had to scratch my head and say, I know nothing about the MMR vaccine. And so that's when I originally called Andy.
Wow. Really? After everything that had happened, everything we'd all been through, everything that the families had suffered for the last 15 years, and the CDC had known all along, there was this MMR autism risk.
As I started to divulge more of the conversations, then I think it really hit him that this was a major crack in the wall of the CDC.
The first thing that Thompson did was to plot a graph of percentage of children vaccinated against age at first MMR vaccination. The children with autism are represented by the pink line, the children without autism by the blue line. Now, if there's no link between early MMR and autism, those two lines should track together, whatever the age at first MMR. Now they do track together until they get to 15 months, and then they separate, and they continue to separate thereafter.
This was their first indication that MMR vaccine was causing autism.
And that finding alone rocked Thompson back on his heels.
This was a huge issue for Andy.
So I said to Brian, Brian, are you recording these conversations?
Recording phone conversations was not really palatable to me. It almost seemed cruel.
Whistleblowers can disappear as easily as they came. They're like a fish on a hook. And your job is to get them into the boat.
Temple walked at 12 months, so he had been walking for an entire month before we went in for the next set of vaccinations. And the minute we walked into the pediatric office, Lou, his twin, she's screaming her head off. I mean, she knows what's going on. She doesn't want the doctor touching her. I look up, and there she's got the shots lined up. Three for him, three for her. By the second shot, Lucinda had flipped herself over, so I had to stop looking at what I was doing, unstrap her, get her out. Well, the minute I get her out and I calm her down a little bit and I look over, he's screaming. I look at the shots and I notice that one of hers was gone. There are only two shots left for her. And I asked the nurse practitioner, I said, what happened to that other shot? She says, oh my goodness, I gave it to him. I said, which one was it? She said, it was the other MMR. I said, call the doctor. This baby is screaming his head off. You've given him an extra shot. I don't know what the effects of that's going to be. We're leaving. And I left. So she never got her shots. I go home. This baby cried. I put him down on his little blanket. He starts banging his head on the floor. The next morning, I go in his room. And he's staring in the space. And he's looking around like this. As if, you know, he's a bit paralyzed. Not the baby who was always doing this every morning, smiling for me to get him out of bed. And I pick him up and he does this. And I said, what has happened to my baby? So I call the clinic and I said, I think my child's had adverse reaction to those shots yesterday. She says, no. I'm waiting for a representative from Merck. I don't think it was a reaction to that.
Bill Thompson looked at African Americans. He saw that those African Americans that got the MMR on time were 2.64 times more likely to get an autism diagnosis than those African Americans that received the MMR after 3 years of age.
What this was suggesting is that among the blacks, the ones that were getting vaccinated earlier were more likely to have autism.
At that point, the group of researchers that was working on this particular study, they were having weekly meetings. Colleen Boyle, who was the head of developmental disabilities branch, and Marsha Lynn Jurgen Alsop, who was one of Thompson's direct supervisors, Frank DiStefano, who was the head of the Immunization Safety Office, and then a postdoctoral research associate named Tanya Bassin. In that meeting, Thompson brought up the fact that African Americans were showing a highly statistically significant risk of autism if they got the MMR on time.
What is said in these closed-door meetings? I mean, do people say, oh, well, this is unacceptable, or is it just, do they always say, oh, this can't be right, or?
I'm not going to lie, but I also don't want to say things to you right now that aren't some written form.
Right.
The analysis regarding the African Americans was the 8 on the Richter scale earthquake that just shook through the CDC.
I take him to see the pediatrician that I know. And she looks at me, she closes the door, and she whispers, she says, Sheila, I believe he has autism. I said, what? Like Rain Man? She says something like that. I'm gonna refer you out to a neurologist. And we go see the neurologist the next week. He says, he has every classical symptom of autism. I do not believe this. I was angry. When he was explaining to me what Canis autism is, he told me he was born that way. I said, no, he wasn't.
Clearly, there was a very high risk of autism in African-American children. But here's the thing. We know that autism is 4 times more common in boys. And so to see that effect mirrored in the African-American children was a compelling finding.
When I looked at African-American males only, the relative risk was 3.36. It just blew my mind. And that's when I wanted to call Bill Thompson on the phone. And his statement to me was, oh, you found it.
It appears in the final publication is that race in general is downplayed.
Of course it is.
Temple's twin is amazing. She is fluent in three languages. She speaks French like a native. She is an A student. She plays classical piano. With all of the guilt that I feel from that day, one of the best decisions I made for her was to walk out of that office without her being vaccinated. At the end of this journey, I don't want to be one of those mothers standing there saying what I wish I would have, could have, should have done. I want to be able to say, I gave it everything that I had. I gave it my best shot. His twin is going into the 11th grade. And for someone who still can't manage to cross the street, now am I grateful he's here? You bet. I'm grateful my son lived. But I was so naive that he would live a fulfilling life. He would end up being a happy man, having a family. My dreams for him. And every year that goes by, the older my son gets, the further that dream seems to be.
All about vaccines!
So what do vaccines do?
Vaccines build up your immune system and make you stronger to fight off disease.
Are vaccines safe?
Yes. Studies involving millions of children have shown no connection between vaccines and autism.
Stick to the schedule!
The CDC's own vaccine schedule, which we are required to adhere to as parents in America, recommends that our children get the MMR between 12 and 18 months. But in this hidden data provided to us by William Thompson, it is clear that for African Americans, this is actually the most dangerous time to deliver the MMR.
The CDC, in my opinion, is one of the, it's where I go to if I need information about an infectious disease. I probably either go on their website or open one of their reference books every day. That building is filled with a lot of scientists that are smarter than me. The analysis plan is one of the most important parts of a scientific study. It's the laws or the rules by which the scientist will adhere to while doing the study. And this analysis plan is put together by the scientists themselves. Sometimes their superiors weigh in. But once they've locked that analysis plan, they've said, this is how we're going to use the data. And you can't deviate from that analysis plan, or you're at risk of fraud, scientific fraud. Did they deviate from the analysis plan after seeing something that they didn't like? If they did, we have a real problem.
Thompson not only played a major role in developing the analysis plan, he was the numbers guy. He was responsible for collecting the data, analyzing the data, and presenting the results. And by November 2001, the results were in.
Now with the MMR autism one, we had an analysis plan that we were supposed to execute as was written. And, I'm going to be sharing these draft analysis plans that we had, and you can see whether we did what we said we're going to do.
That analysis plan had been agreed upon not only by the co-authors, but also CDC superiors.
In order to conceal the effect of the MMR, what they had to do was to reduce the number of children in the study in order to reduce what is referred to as the statistical power. That is, the ability of the study to detect a difference if one genuinely exists. In the analysis plan, they had agreed to use two sources of information. The first was the children's school records, and the second was the children's Georgia birth certificate records. So while every child in the study had a school record, only half of the children in the study had a Georgia birth certificate record because the other half had been born in other states. So the analysis plan was explicit. Information on a child's race was to come from their school record.
But when confronted by data that revealed an increased risk of autism in African-American children,
so they deviated from their analysis plan. They chose to get the race data not from the school record, but from the Georgia birth certificate record.
Instead of having 3,000 individuals in the study, it went down to about 1800. The relative risk went down from 2.64 to 1.8, but more importantly, that relative risk was no longer statistically significant.
I now ask you to step forward to receive your prize from the hands of His Majesty the King.
I am Rick Montagnier, MD. I am a virologist by training. I obtained the Nobel Prize for my contribution to the discovery of the AIDS virus. The vaccine-autism interaction is a worldwide problem, not only in this country, in Europe, but also in Asia, even in Africa. The MMR vaccination, in a very early stage of infancy, before the age of 2, was more prominent in Afro-American children, and this was hidden for some time. This fraud, of course, ranks very high, to my opinion, in the ethics of medicine and science. CDC in the past has done a very important work on the discovery of AIDS, so I'm very disappointed to see a different situation with CDC dealing with autism.
Shortly after Julie Gerberding became head of the CDC, I began to communicate with her and ask her to come to my office. There didn't seem to be objective research going on. There was the CDC trying to promote vaccination for children, and then they were doing the safety research themselves.
In CDC's judgment, the best public policy is to continue vaccination unchanged while aggressively working to try to identify causes of developmental disabilities.
The CDC, I just thought, was institutionally conflicted.
The CDC can't take money directly from pharma, but they can set up a foundation, and the foundation can attract donations from commercial interests, and does. Merck, GlaxoSmithKline, now Pfizer, Sanofi, Aventis have huge multi-billion dollar vaccine businesses. They're profitable, they've grown because some of these new high-tech vaccines that are patented, that are high-priced, get protected by this little cocoon of regulatory capture in HHS, and are guaranteed multi-billion dollar franchises.
When I was working at Merck, I was a sales rep for Vioxx. The whole scandal started when it was discovered that Merck had manipulated data and covered up the fact that Vioxx actually caused twice the amount of heart attacks and strokes than the placebo.
What I learned from that experience was just because things are on the market does not mean they are safe.
I think we get into a very dangerous territory with vaccinations. If a drug company gets just one vaccine added to the schedule, they can make upwards of $30 billion in 1 year.
It's no secret. I think they've published their intention, which is they want to create an environment of constant vaccination from cradle to grave. They want infant vaccines and expanded flu shots, DTaP boosters, Gardasil shots, meningococcal shots. They want adult vaccines. They want you and me to come in and get a constant barrage of shots. And then they want vaccines for the elderly.
We have a highly profitable product because the safety testing isn't as rigorous as a normal pharmaceutical drug. The gold standard is double-blind, placebo-based, long-term study. And that just isn't done with vaccines because they're classified in a different way as a public health measure. And they haven't been tested in combination with other vaccines. Yet doctors give 6 to 9 doses per visit. It's insane. If pharmaceutical drug was tested like this, it wouldn't be on the market. But because it's a vaccine and the safety testing is less rigorous, our children are being experimented on.
I don't like to look at autism from a behavioral perspective. I look at it from more of a what causes it in each child. When I want to define autism, I have to say that it's the inability to detoxify the way you're supposed to, or at the rate that you're supposed to. And it all has to do with this toxic overload. These children are not detoxifying from the vaccinations. Same thing with GMO products. The pesticides in our food, if I can prevent the child from being exposed to more toxins, then when I'm teaching the child, at least the child's getting better and not continuously getting worse.
Without a doubt, what's happened to Billy has changed his life.
the strike.
What I have on my hands now is a 19-year-old man. He's 6'2". He is volatile. On good days, Billy is brilliant. He's an angel. On bad days, the slightest thing can trigger him, and he's scary.
I'm going to go downstairs and get
Billy,
Daddy right
you need
now.
You need to stay up here, okay?
I'm going to kill Daddy right now.
Bill, listen to me. I'm going to stay with you up here, and you're going to try and calm down, okay?
The reason they become aggressive and dangerous in some cases is because they have no ability to communicate.
Because Mummy asked Kent for Kent bringing the sweet corn and then bringing the chickens here. Because this is your fault, Mummy.
If you were not able to express your needs, your wants, your desires, your happiness and sadness and so on, you would become aggressive. That's often when we see the worst part of autism.
We had to occupy his room and use his video player. And of course, that is a massive intrusion in his space, and he got very upset.
Where else in this house can we play a video? Remember, listen, Bill, push the stress level, Philly.
It's level down.
Bill, don't touch Danny. Out there, there's millions of me's, there's millions of polytommies with vaccine-damaged children. I am telling you this because I do not want you to live the life that I've led. I do not want you to go through the pain. I do not want to see you suffer or your family suffer. That is why I'm telling you. I have no other reason to tell you about it. It's not my concern. My kid's already damaged.
I am a senior research scientist here at MIT in the Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory. I have a bachelor's degree in biology from MIT, and I have MSEE and PhD degrees, also from MIT, in electrical engineering and computer science. I became interested in autism a long time ago when my best friend at the time had a son who was diagnosed with autism following a DPT shot. He ran a high fever after the shot, seizures a week later, and then was later diagnosed with autism.
We have to accept the fact that autism is new, that before 1930, the rate of autism in the world was effectively zero. And then for a long time, it was one in 10,000.
I got interested in studying autism 8 years ago when I saw the numbers go up, and I was quite alarmed because I could see that the trend was exponential growth. And exponential growth is extremely scary.
Since really the mid to late 80s, we've gone from this low prevalence environment to a rate of increase where the trend is still vertical. We have not seen a flattening in trend.
So every couple of years, the CDC provides a number of what percentage of the kids are diagnosed with autism. And you've got the dots going all the way back to 1975. You draw the line, it is a perfect exponential curve. If we assume that things are going to continue as they have for the past 30 years into the future, we can predict that by 2032, 80% of the boys born will end up on the autism spectrum. Half the children, 80% of the boys.
If you think this vaccine is only a problem for African-American kids like me, you're wrong.
There's an even bigger problem, one that puts all kids at risk, and it's called isolated autism.
When the CDC researchers set out to do the study, they asked themselves the question, if early MMR vaccine causes autism, in which children would we be most likely to find this effect? Their answer is children with no developmental concerns for the first year of life, children who were perfectly healthy until they received their MMR vaccine. They called this group isolated autism. Now, this does not refer to an isolated case of autism or an isolated group with autism. They isolated autism out. These were children who had no comorbid conditions apart from their autism. No cerebral palsy, no mental retardation, no visual or hearing impairment, no epilepsy, and no birth defects. This risk group
includes essentially every healthy child in the world.
I'm a single father raising a 15-year-old, severely autistic, nonverbal teenage daughter. When she was 15 months old, she received a round of vaccines that included the MMR and the DTaP. She developed a high fever. When the fever broke, she lost everything.
My daughter was 6 weeks old when I took her in for her vaccination. 2 hours later, she had a 5-minute seizure. And 2 hours after that, she had another 5-minute seizure.
Mom is here. Come on, come on, come on. You're okay, you're okay. Come on, baby. Come on, babe. Come on, you can do it. Come on, babe, come on out. Come on, come on, baby, come on. Keep breathing, come on, come on, come on, come on.
The vaccination gave her severe brain damage and she had seizures every day for the rest of her life until she died in my arms at the age of 15.
There is no good reason to choose not to get a vaccine.
He got his MMR and he got his DTP. And within days, he stopped talking.
Projectile vomiting, convulsions.
He went blind in his left eye.
Vaccines took our healthy, happy baby and made him unwell.
She lost all acquired speech.
He lost his speech. He lost his eye contact like the flick of a switch.
If vaccines were unsafe, I think this would be an interesting and reasonable discussion.
Obviously, some minority get hurt by this stuff. I don't understand why this is controversial.
Vaccines are safe. Get vaccinated.
It's like, you know what? Shut the fuck up and let me take every vaccine that Merck wants to shove down my throat.
Autism is not a side effect of vaccine, or to say it another way, because some people don't hear this well, vaccines do not cause autism.
Hear this well.
Hear this well. Please hear this well.
Hear this well.
Vaccines can and do cause autism.
My grandson,
daughter Lily,
and my daughter.
My son was fully vaccinated.
My son Jackson.
I had a healthy, typically developing boy.
Please hear this well.
Vaccines cause autism.
One day everyone will know the truth about vaccines. Hear this well.
I actually think the most interesting results are the elevated ones for the isolated, ones that don't have other comorbid conditions. The effect is where you would think it would happen.
In isolated autism, he saw a very, very strong effect specific to those kids that got the MMR on time. When Bill Thompson ran those numbers, he saw an astronomical effect. Some of the numbers were actually the relative risks were as high as 7 or 8 times higher with these kids that were diagnosed with just isolated autism, no other diagnosis, versus those controls.
Isolated autism is confusing because it sounds small, but it really is a big problem. Because all healthy children, no matter what race, are at risk. For example, my sister's 18 months old and she's supposed to get her MMR shot right now. But if she does, she's 7 times more likely to get autism than if my parents wait until after 3 years old. So I hope my parents don't do it.
Here's what's really scary. When we look at isolated autism, we see that there's up to 7-fold increase in the incidence of autism between those that received the vaccine between 12 and 18 months versus those that got it after 3 years old. But let's be perfectly clear. Every child in this study had received the MMR vaccine. What would the numbers be if you compared children who got the vaccine between 12 and 18 months versus children that never got the vaccine at all? This is often referred to as the vax versus unvax study. And the CDC refuses to do this study, even though every drug that we take has been through this exact study. There's a group who take the drug, and then they compare it with a group that do not take the drug, and they see, are there more side effects and complications with the group that takes the drug? So why does the CDC refuse to do the vax versus unvax study? Probably because when we look at the results of this study, we realize that the risk would be astronomical and is likely to be one of the major reasons we're seeing this skyrocketing increase of autism worldwide.
Just like the African-American children, they went into the room and they sliced and diced the data in an effort to get rid of that effect.
So this is Colleen Boyle's meeting notes how they plan to present the data by these age groups, that after the fact, when the data are in, she writes reformat, and then she puts in new age groups. Even this failed to achieve the desired effect, since in the end they simply omitted the relevant findings from the paper altogether.
I was just looking at that, I'm like, oh my God, I cannot believe we did what we did. But we did.
Yeah.
So it's all there. It's all there.
And you in the health field, you who run our health agencies in this country who are sitting here today, you have an obligation to these kids that you just saw there to make sure that these studies are complete, thorough, so that everybody knows that we have all the facts, and you don't have that.
One of the things we did, because this was such an important topic, was to have them be sworn in, so they were under oath. And if they were doctoring the results of a study, and they did it deliberately, they committed a felony.
It used to be 1 in 10,000, and now it's 1 in more than 250. Kids that are being damaged in this country that are autistic. Now, those kids are going to grow up. They aren't going to die. It's not like a lot of diseases where they get infected and they drop dead. They're going to live to be 50, 60 years old. Now, who do you think's going to take care of them? It's going to be us, all of us, the taxpayers. And it's going to cost, I think, as you said, Ms. Maloney, trillions of dollars. So we can't let the pharmaceutical companies and our government cover this mess up today, because it ain't gonna go away. And it's gonna cost the taxpayers trillions more if we wait around on it. And for our FDA and HHS and the health agencies to continue to hide behind this facade that there have been studies that conclusively prove otherwise is just wrong too.
So the CDC wasn't just doing this study inside of a bubble. In fact, it was the exact opposite. They were under fire. You had Congressman Dan Burton in front of the Congress demanding answers about mercury and the MMR and vaccine studies and the connection to autism. Dave Weldon, Congressman from Florida, is reaching out to Julie Gerberding with serious complaints on how he thinks this entire issue is being handled. On top of that, the Department of Justice is requesting files and data from the CDC because of a previous study called the Verstraten study that had so many anomalies, it looked like scientific fraud was taking place. So they were suspicious. So then you look at the emails that Thompson's provided to us, and you see that he's reaching out to his line manager, Dr. Melinda Wharton, throwing up red flags, saying, I first spoke with you in September of 2002 regarding the sensitive results we have been struggling with in the MMR autism study. How do you struggle with scientific results? I mean, facts are facts. Data are data. That doesn't make any sense. So you've got Dan Burton breathing down their necks. The Department of Justice is requesting files. And William Thompson finds out that Colleen Boyle has brought in a lawyer to help her decide what materials are too sensitive to provide to the Department of Justice. This obviously freaks William Thompson out, because later in the email to Wharton, he says, I will be hiring my own personal attorney. And it's extremely unfortunate that we need to be concerned about whether our own legal rights are covered when participating in a study such as this. I mean, what's going on here? We have government scientists lawyering up over a children's safety study. Clearly this does not sit well at all with Dr. Thompson, because at the end of this email, he makes what looks to me to be a clear threat. My level of concern has also caused me to seriously consider removing myself as an author on the draft manuscript. So then a few days later, Thompson writes directly to Dr. Walter Orenstein, head of the National Immunization Program, saying, I am not interested in taking all of the political heat that will go along with that study. Thompson has gone all the way to the top of his department. I mean, we don't ever get a response from Walter Orenstein, but Thompson is very clear on what happened next.
The higher ups wanted to do certain things, and I went along with it. In terms of chain of command, I was number 4 out of 5.
Dr. Thompson talked about destruction of documents, and that in fall of 2002,
There was a meeting with the trash can rolled in, and they selected documents to be destroyed.
I led all the analyses with the DiStefano thing. Literally, everyone else got rid of all their documents, so the only documents that exist right now from that study are mine.
These documents were no doubt federal records. They were very important documents because they showed a very strong statistically significant effect.
He felt that, quite rightly, it would be illegal to destroy those documents, and so in his office he kept not only the hard copies, but the computerized files for that study.
There was a dramatically different result presented before and after the time frame that Thompson alleged that these data were destroyed. If I never had the documents before October 2002, there would be nothing that would show that they actually had the results in hand and they decided to destroy those results. I filed a formal complaint to the Office of Research Integrity and the Department of Health and Human Services. I heard back not long after the complaint was filed, and the letter basically stated that every co-author except for Dr. Thompson denied that any such meeting was scheduled. They denied that any material was destroyed or thrown away. They were calling Dr. Thompson a liar. It was their word against his. Dr. Thompson predicted that this would happen.
There's things I haven't even shared with you because I can't prove it. And that's what I struggle with. I don't want to share things with you that I can't prove, that there aren't hard records. Mm-hmm. Because I am worried that the other four people will collude and say, no, that's not true.
Dr. Thompson provided meeting notes to me for precisely the time where the co-authors are claiming that no meeting took place.
That's what I keep seeing again and again and again, where these senior people just do completely unethical, vile things, and no one holds them accountable.
So look, once you have the data, a scientific study like this is a relatively simple process. You just run the data, you get the results, and then you publish those results in a paper. In their own analysis plan, this study was only supposed to take 6 months, from May 2001 to December 2001. So if they weren't destroying data, why did this study end up taking 4 years? The question everybody needs to be asking the CDC is what the heck happened between October 2002 and February of 2004?
The reason you don't see anything else circulating on the study, it was five of us behind closed doors for 2 years.
Wow. So after 2 years of secret meetings behind closed doors, DiStefano emerges with the final draft of the MMR study, and they're going to present it to the Institute of Medicine.
People on the IOM move from industry, government, academia, government, industry, and then they bounce around. It's all the same people, and there wasn't a really good policeman in all this to really make sure that the vaccine safety studies are done properly and that they're done objectively. It just didn't seem to me like we were running a system that was credible. I had written to Julie Gerberding, and I asked her to postpone the February 9th Institute of Medicine meeting. This report, the Institute of Medicine report, I wanted postponed because of my concern that this was not an exercise in discovering the truth, but was instead a meeting being driven by a desire to short-circuit important research and draw premature conclusions.
The problem is, William Thompson, being the lead scientist, he's going to have to present their findings. And he's not happy about it. In fact, he's so upset that he goes above the lead author, DiStefano, above Walter Orenstein, all the way to the head of the CDC, Dr. Julie Gerberding. And in an email, he says, "Dear Dr. Gerberding, I will have to present several problematic results relating to statistical associations between the receipt of MMR vaccine and autism." Basically saying, I'm not going to continue this lie. If you put me up there, I'm going to tell the truth.
Thompson was originally scheduled to provide a briefing because he basically told Director Gerberding that he would have to say that there is a causal association. He was switched at the last minute with Frank DiStefano, who was able to report to the IOM falsely We have found no association between MMR and autism.
The IOM was the point of no return, and so deprived of the truth, the IOM declared MMR vaccine safe.
It was a rush to judgment to shut the door permanently and completely on the MMR autism link. It's absolutely appalling that much of what I said turned out exactly to be true. They were trying to short circuit the research.
It's the lowest, it's the lowest point in my career that I went along with that paper.
After their brilliant work on the MMR study, DeStefano and his team received an award from the Department of Health and Human Services. And then several years later, Dr. Julie Gerberding received an award of her own, a high-paid job as head of the vaccine division at Merck. Clearly, Merck appreciated the work she had done investigating their vaccine.
Just to let you know, I wrote a paper on my results on MMR.
Yeah.
And it will include something that I got from you.
Brian was about to publish a paper using data that could only have come from an inside source at the CDC, a whistleblower. And from that point forward, William Thompson was a marked man.
Andy approached me and said, it's time to publicize a CDC whistleblower.
Ironically, 12 years later, while Thompson is baring his soul to Brian Hooker, in front of Congress, Colleen Boyle is just peddling the same old CDC fraud. But this time it's to a new player, and that's Congressman Bill Posey from Florida.
I wonder if the CDC has conducted or facilitated a study comparing vaccinated children with unvaccinated children yet. Have you done that?
We have actually done a number of studies looking at the relationship between thimerosal vaccines and autism and other developmental disabilities.
The lies from the CDC were still the same. The difference now is we had William Thompson.
Vaccines and their components did not increase the risk for autism.
My time's very limited here. So clearly, definitely, unequivocally, you have studied vaccinated versus unvaccinated.
We have not studied vaccinated versus unvaccinated.
Stop there. That was the meaning of my question. You wasted 2 minutes of my time.
Brian had also submitted a related paper to a journal called Nature Neuroscience, and in that paper, he had specifically referred to an unnamed source at the CDC. And my worst fears were realized when a journalist from Nature Neuroscience contacted the CDC, contacted Walter Orenstein. The message went on to Frank DeStefano, who sent it out to the co-authors saying, keep your heads down, this may be coming your way.
The fear was all of a sudden we'd be dredging the river for Bill Thompson.
So I said to him, Brian, we've got to do three things. We have got to get Thompson a whistleblower lawyer, we've got to make sure that his documents are with Posey, and we've got to reveal his name. Whistleblowers are in danger only as long as the only people who know their identity are their enemies.
Do vaccines cause autism? In the last 30 years, the childhood vaccine schedule has tripled, while the U.S. autism rate has skyrocketed from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 50. Dozens of published research papers show that, yes, vaccines and autism are linked. Yet the debate rages on, in part because of the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, passed by Congress as a result of pharmaceutical lobbying. It shields drug companies from liability for injuries and deaths caused by the vaccines they manufacture. Vaccines that the federal government admits are unavoidably unsafe. Instead of suing the pharmaceutical company directly, parents are forced to petition the Department of Health and Human Services, and if federal health officials oppose compensation, the case is argued before a special master in the U.S. Claims Court. Many refer to this as vaccine court. Here are some shocking facts about the so-called vaccine court. Pharmaceutical companies do not have to participate in the proceedings at all. Taxpayers pay for all damages. The U.S. Department of Justice acts as the government's lawyer, with taxpayers footing the bill for their defense.
beginning in 2002. There were already thousands of cases accumulating in vaccine court. And the average compensation for an autistic child is in the range of $5 million. So just do the math. The government was facing several hundred billion, possibly $1 trillion in liability. As the autism epidemic grew, they had to develop a fraudulent study that would exonerate MMR to deliberately defeat the cases in vaccine court to avoid paying the $1 trillion. So the thousands of autism petitioners were denied their fair day in court by a corrupt and deliberate obstruction of justice. It is one of the most unethical medical decisions of all time, because it was made with knowledge to sacrifice these children as a direct affront to the congressional mandate that they all be compensated.
In the fall of last year, I got a call from an inside source who told me that in 2 weeks, there's going to be a whistleblower from the CDC who is going to come out and say that the CDC had committed fraud on the MMR study and that they knew that vaccines were actually causing autism. I mean, that's a huge story. Unfortunately, it was a story I would not be able to tell on a medical talk show because a lot of our funding was coming from the pharmaceutical industry. And we were also very good friends with the CDC, who had appeared on our show many, many times. But I knew that once this story broke, 2 weeks later, that the mainstream news media would pick it up. Fox would be on it. CNN would be on it. MSNBC. And we're talking about the biggest medical story in the last decade or two, at least. So that 2 weeks came.
I saw the video that was posted by Andrew Wakefield and Brian Hooker, and I heard the words of William Thompson and his confession.
Oh my God, I cannot believe we did what we did. But we did. It's all there.
And I watched the blogosphere go crazy. Tweets, Facebook, social media, everybody talking about it. But not one mainstream media source went anywhere near the story. In fact, on CNN, someone put the story up on iReport and CNN took it down. And at that moment, I realized, wait a minute. Not only is my medical talk show being produced by the pharmaceutical industry, all of television is. We were never going to get this story. But we certainly did get a story.
A highly contagious measles outbreak.
Major outbreak.
Measles outbreak.
Measles on the march in America.
This outbreak is showing no signs of letting up.
But in 2014, the number tripled to 644 measles cases reported in 27 states.
It's really amazing to consider the number of cases of autism every year and to contrast that to, let's say, the number of children who acquired measles by going to Disneyland. It's a tiny number of children who acquired measles, and it's a vast number of children who are being diagnosed with autism every day.
We don't know what causes autism. I mean, that's fair to say. We're not sure as a scientific community what causes autism, but we know that vaccines do not.
Now, I'm not saying that Sanjay Gupta is a bad guy. In fact, I think that he tries to do a lot of good, just like many doctors do. But if they're being lied to by the scientific body that provides them with their information, what happens to all of us? What happens if a good doctor sees the same data that I saw?
So you're a scientist, basically. Mm-hmm. So you're studying this. And you feel 100% comfortable. You even said you have kids, so you're a family person.
Yes.
You would feel very...
How long have you been a doctor, and sort of what's your area of specialty?
Sure. I've been a family medicine physician for over 10 years now, and treating families, everyone from newborns all the way up to my oldest patient is 96.
So do you administer vaccines as a part of that?
Yes, I do administer vaccines. In our clinic, we follow the CDC recommendations, and we give that information to our patients, and we give them a schedule of when their children are going to need to be vaccinated and so on and so forth.
There's something I want to show you.
This is the formal complaint about what they've been given by William Thompson, the whistleblower at the CDC. Okay. There's all sorts of reference materials in here and things like that. I'm just going to give you time to look at it, study it as long as you want, okay? When you feel like you have a grasp of it, it's gonna take some time. Appreciate you taking the time. All right? Okay. So I have sent you what William Thompson has said is the fraud at the CDC. All of that data that was missing. Did you get a chance to really look it over?
It's really unbelievable how blatantly the data was switched around. It made me question whether or not this organization that's been mandating how I practice medicine for the past 10 years, if they're lying about this or leaving data out about this particular study, what else am I being lied to about?
I'm still trying to digest it because this study, which was used to kind of give the definitive answer to us pediatricians that, oh, the MMR is not related to autism, I kind of feel like I've been lied to. When they set out to do the study, they wanted to look at the data and interpret the data, but then there's a piece of data that they chose to ignore. The data they excluded was really, really significant.
Think about it, it's a big deal. It is a big deal for a physician to have to deal with the fact that for the past 10, 20 years, we've been potentially destroying the brains of children.
Everything I've been telling my patients for the last 10 years has been based on a lie and a cover-up.
Parents making decisions about their children's health deserve to have the best information available to them. They should be able to count on federal agencies to tell them the truth.
Once Brian and I had outed Bill Thompson, he got himself a whistleblower lawyer. He provided all of his documents on the fraudulent CDC study to Congressman Posey, who then went before the Congress.
Considering the nature of the whistleblower's documents, as well as the involvement of the CDC, a hearing and a thorough investigation is warranted. So I ask, Mr. Speaker, I beg, I implore my colleagues on the Appropriations Committees to please, please take such action. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I yield back.
It's now been 7 months since Congressman Bill Posey urged the Congress to subpoena Bill Thompson, and they have done nothing.
Bill Thompson wants to be subpoenaed by Congress. As a CDC employee from the federal government, he cannot speak voluntarily because of the threat of jail time.
Absolutely, William Thompson needs to go before Congress. He needs to go before the whole nation. Everybody needs to see what he has to say.
He needs to be deposed in front of a committee in Congress. And Julie Gerberding has to be brought in and deposed. Because this is a very, very, very disturbing revelation for this researcher to come forward and be saying now that they were indeed deliberately concealing critical information about an MMR autism link. Horrible, horrible development.
Deviation from an analysis plan, omission of crucial data, destruction of documents, obstruction of justice, misleading the Congress, grievous harm to innocent children. This has to be investigated.
You and I are in agreement. Vaccine safety should not be in the CDC.
Absolutely. You would end up with an agency like the National Transportation Safety Board.
The next thing they need to do is somebody needs to reintroduce the Weldon-Maloney bill. It needs to be very, very quickly enacted, and you need to take all of the vaccine safety responsibilities out of the CDC.
These children have been maimed by the actions of Colleen Boyle, Frank DiStefano, Marshall Lynn Jurgen Alsop, and Tanya Basin. My son has been debilitated for 17 years. I think jail time is too good for these individuals who have perpetrated such fraud.
The notion of vaccinating children, protecting children against serious infectious disease with vaccines that are safe and effective is laudable. You hear about measles outbreaks in Disneyland and then they try and sell you MMR. We didn't see autism being reported as a consequence of the single vaccine, only of the triple vaccine. So my feeling is that we need to review vaccination policy across the board. But in the first instance, I do believe we can make the problem far less if we separate those vaccines out into their single measles, mumps, and rubella.
I just cannot imagine what it will be like if we really do face a future in which half the children born end up on the autism spectrum. I mean, it will be so disruptive of the school system. There'll be so little money to be able to spend on the normal children to help them, to bring them up and to educate them. We're just going to have extremely sick children and parents that will be so distracted by the challenge of bringing up these children that are so sick, that our society will not be able to focus on anything else.
The implications of that for our country, for our competitiveness as a nation, for our economy, are massive. They must know, and they do know, that there's a national emergency.
I mean, this is going to be a complete catastrophe if we just let it happen.
What will you say the next time a mother sitting there with her baby in their hands says, Dr. Rachel, is the MMR vaccine safe?
I'm going to tell her. I'm going to say, you know, honestly, I'm not going to give the MMR vaccine to my babies, and here's why.